you have more questions, I'm going to try to come up with the answers on this episode of Locked On Pelicans. I'm Brett Dawson.
You know, when he told us that we were going to come up here Wednesday at the team, you know, everybody, you know, I pushed back whatever I had to do to just make sure I come here. So, you know, that's what we do. We represent Louisiana, not just New Orleans.
That was Anthony Davis. He plays for the Pelicans. I'm Brett Dawson. I cover the Pelicans for the New Orleans Advocate. And this is Locked On Pelicans, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. So clearly, if you like the Pelicans, you're in the right place. That clip you heard from Anthony Davis, courtesy of Pelicans.com, was about the team's visit, part of the team's visit to Baton Rouge over the this past week. They visited to help out a little bit with flood relief, do a little volunteer work there. We're going to talk about that in just a few minutes. But for the most part today, what I'm going to do is take your questions. Actually, one of the questions has to do with that Baton Rouge visit, but we'll get into all that in a minute. Mostly the show lately, I've had a guest. We've been doing kind of long-form guest interviews, and I like that format. This week, just kind of got into the show a little bit late, a little bit of slow time for me, and I had a little travel and just getting to it a little bit late. So I thought it would be a really good time to do a solo question and answer thing. So if you're one of those people who hates hearing my voice and likes hearing other people's, rewind that Anthony Davis clip and play it a bunch, because that's the only other voice that you're going to hear. So do want to tell you a little bit of exciting news. This episode of Locked On Pelicans is brought to you by SeatGeek. You want to download that mobile SeatGeek app if you haven't already. I know so many people have, because it's the easiest way to buy tickets for sporting events, for concerts. You can now, if you have that app, or if you go get it, you can use the promo code LO Pelicans, as in Locked On Pelicans, L-O Pelicans, and that will get you a $20 rebate on your first purchase at SeatGeek. If you've used, I use Kayak all the time for travel. So when I go out of town, Kayak is the site I go to. It allows me to just sort of aggregate, check all kinds of places for, you know, for the lowest hotel prices, for the lowest flight prices. SeatGeek just basically does the same thing for sports and concert tickets. It's just the best way for you to find those things. If I go out of town, on the occasion that I do go out of town for a sporting event, that's what I use. I've used it for a long time, so it's cool to have them as a sponsor. So let's get into some news of the day. It's actually news of the week this week. I wrote some of that news of the week this week about Lance Stephenson, of all people. The Pelicans had him in for a workout this week. As we know, as you know, if you listen to this podcast, if you read theadvocate.com, which, by the way, you should do. I'm sneaking the plug in this time, trying to sneak it in. I see you can't use that 15-second plus button, you know. Go to theadvocate.com, read our Pelicans coverage, because we've had quite a bit for it to be a kind of a slow last couple of weeks. But the biggest story, I think, lately has been that Lance Stephenson story. You know who Lance is, a guy who played very, very well for the Indiana Pacers a few years ago and has really struggled to find a niche since then. For the most part, he did not play well in Charlotte after he signed with the Hornets as a free agent. He did not play well for the Clippers after he was traded. He did play well for Memphis last year. Pelicans fans will remember that very well, because he played a great game against New Orleans in Memphis when both those teams were really shorthanded. He had his career high, 33 points. You know, he's a 6'5", 230-pound guy who can do a lot of things on the floor. He's a good offensive initiator. He's technically kind of a 2-3 swing guy, but he has some point guard skills in the sense that he can initiate an offense some. He does a lot of things well. You obviously know. He's done a lot of things poorly, by the way, too, which includes seemingly getting along with people. Lance has had some difficulties, reports of, you know, a fight with Evan Turner. He's been known, obviously, as an agitator, he may be most famous for blowing in LeBron James's ear. So it's really not what you want to be known the most for in your career, but Lance is a challenging guy, and the Pelicans are a challenging situation in terms of trying to make a team. You know, we talked about Sean Dawson, who's coming in knowing there are 15 guys already under guaranteed contracts. Lance Stephenson worked out for the Pelicans knowing the same thing. There are going to be more than 15 guys in camp, and Lance isn't necessarily going to be one of those guys. We'll talk about that here in a little bit when we get into the Q&A thing, but definitely did work out for the Pelicans, so there's at least some degree of interest on both sides there. Now, some of that is, you know, you're kind of kicking the tires, just kind of seeing, the Pelicans have evaluated a couple of different guys, or we're going to. They had some interest also in Ty Lawson before he signed with Sacramento. So just because you have 15 guaranteed contracts doesn't mean that everything's locked in. And again, We're going to talk about that when we get into the questions, so I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on that. We'll also talk some about this visit to Baton Rouge, a significant thing for the Pelicans to do. Obviously, Baton Rouge is struggling a whole lot after the flooding from these past few weeks, and the Pelicans went down and spent some time with some kids in the area. I think the players enjoy doing that kind of stuff, and they made a point, Anthony Davis, as you heard in that clip at the top of the show, and Alvin Gentry, too, making a point that they are Louisiana's team, not just New Orleans' team. And I think that's something the Pelicans really want to do, is have outreach into this footprint. We've talked about, you know, on a very different kind of level, talked about the importance maybe of someday having a D-League team and getting it in the footprint, trying to expand the brand of basketball. But this is also the kind of thing that I think is important. You know, unlike the Saints, they're not in season. They have the option to kind of go do this right now and spend some time in Baton Rouge. And I think that's a really good gesture. And I think those players enjoy doing that. And we'll talk a little bit about that visit when we get into the Q&As as well. I already told you about theadvocate.com, and you know by now that you got to check that out. I also want to remind you, you can subscribe to this podcast. I like it when you do that. You can subscribe on iTunes, on Stitcher, we're on Google Play. You can rate it and review it, and I would really like it if you would leave a 5-star rating and leave a positive review if you like the show. That just gets us a little bit of attention, gives us a chance to move up some lists and get some more listeners, and we definitely want to do that. You also should be doing all those same things, subscribing, rating, and reviewing Locked On Saints, which is the Saints podcast on this Locked On Podcast Network. That is a show that will give you everything you want to know and then some about the Saints. If you're interested in everything from who the quarter, you know, how the quarterbacks are playing to who the gunner is going to be, especially if you're into the gunner, you're going to get that information from Nick Underhill, from Joel Erickson, from Adam West. The show is fun. It's a really good time, and you should definitely go check that out. Nick and Joel also do a great job covering the Saints at theadvocate.com, and I just got another plug in. I might set a record for advocate plugs today. So check out that podcast. Check out that website. And also, as a reminder, if you've got questions, we're going to get to a bunch of them here in a minute. You can always send me a tweet at B Dawson Writes, or send the show a tweet at Locked On Pels, or email me at lockedonpelicans@gmail.com. That's a great place to send me any suggestions that you might have. If there are guests you want to hear, if there are things you'd like me to talk about with guests I've had on in the past, who I will probably have on again, those things are great. And if you're interested in advertising with the podcast, that's also the place to do it. If you want a sponsorship opportunity, that's lockedonpelicans@gmail.com. That all feels like a little disjointed. It's a lot of stuff we got through there at the top of the show, but today is the kind of show I like doing. These are fun. I like answering your questions. I like getting a little bit of interaction. I actually talked about having a guest do the Q&A with me today, but the person I had planned was not available, so we're going to try to do that down the road. I think that'll be fun. So he's totally busy. I don't want to call him out. It's a perfectly good reason. Got friends in from out of town, so I'm not going to give Mason Ginsburg or whoever it was a bunch of grief for not being able to do the show. I did wait until the last minute, so it's really more my fault. It's not Mason Ginsburg's fault, so don't blame Mason Ginsburg for not wanting to come on this show. It's okay. No hard feelings. I still like him. So I think that covers all our bases. We've gotten in the mentions of the things we need to get in. We've taken a shot at Mason, and I think it's probably time to jump into some questions because you guys had quite a few of them. So let's dive in. One of the best parts of me answering questions is mispronouncing names. You have to enjoy this, right? So maybe at Powell Kajak, which is at Powell _ Kajak, maybe? I don't know. He asks, he said he's seen photos of the Pels in Baton Rouge, and why were Hill and Drew Holiday missing, Solomon Hill and Drew Holiday. And he says, great work, and so thanks for that. The thing in Baton Rouge was it's a voluntary activity. Guys can go if they wanted to. Some guys were out of town. Anthony Davis mentioned he moved some things around to be there, but nobody's really required to be in New Orleans at this point. Camp opens, kind of officially opens on the 23rd, September 23rd, with Media Day. And then the 24th is the first practice of preseason camp. So there are guys in town. There are a lot of guys working out in town. There are a lot of guys doing some stuff. I don't know if there are a lot of guys. There are some guys doing some work with coaches. Sean Dawson told me he was going to be working with the coaches as soon as he got down here last week, or the early part of this week, I guess. So basically what I'm saying is there's no requirement to be anywhere right now. So nobody's really missing from that kind of thing. Some guys can go and some guys can't, and that's okay. There's no, for many of those kinds of outings like that, it wouldn't be required anyway. But right now it's not even required that anybody be in New Orleans. They don't absolutely have to be here yet. So guys will start to trickle in. A lot of them are already here. But until camp really starts, there's some stuff to do before that, but there's not a lot of mandatory stuff going on right now. Okay, now we're going to combine some questions because there are several Lance Stephenson questions. That is not surprising, but let's go over them just a little bit, and then I'm just going to give kind of a combined answer to all these. So Jordan Phelps, my man Jordan, he gets two questions. We'll get to his other one later on. He says, I don't know if you want to do predictions, but would love to hear your thoughts on the odds of Lance making the roster. Hunter, whose Twitter handle I hate saying because it's Hunter 233334. I'm always afraid I'm adding or missing a three there. He wants to know if Lance is going to make him dance. I'm going to take that to mean, is he going to make the team? Because obviously if he makes a team, that's what Lance does. Jim Sunseri, J.M. Sunseri, asks, he says he's been seeing some extra chatter about Monroe, that's Greg Monroe, this week. And could the Pelicans be sending out two players to get Monroe and then sign Lance? So Lance Stephenson questions galore, and that is not surprising. So we got into Lance just a little bit at the start, but let's get into it just a little bit more, and I'll kind of give you a sense of where I am. I'm going to disappoint some people here. I'm definitely not going to lay odds on Lance. Sorry, Jordan. But here's what I think is most likely to happen with Lance. I think probably he'll get a camp invite at this point. To my knowledge, on Thursday at 5 o'clock Central Time, that has not happened. I think there's a good chance of that. I'd say here's some odds. I'd say it's a better than 50-50 chance that he's going to get an invitation to play for the Pelicans in camp. By the way, he might get several camp invitations, and so just, you know, he might get one from the Pelicans and not come here, for all I know. But I think there's a chance that he'll be in camp, a pretty decent chance, you know, as I said, better than half, better than 50-50, that he'll be with the Pelicans in camp. And then you just got to see what he has and what he is at this point. And most importantly, is he going to fit in? Is he going to be a good fit with this group? That's so important because they spent so much time and money, frankly, this offseason trying to get guys who they felt like were good locker room guys, who were real, real hardworking guys, guys who wouldn't necessarily rock the boat. They wanted a really cohesive locker room. They wanted really good defensive players. You need some offense as well. So I can understand them exploring some options. But if you take a look at a guy like Lance Stephenson or a guy like Ty Lawson, who, again, they looked at before he signed with Sacramento, and that didn't go anywhere. He was signing with the Kings. You have to take a very careful look at guys like that because they've had their problems off the court. Ty Lawson obviously has had legal issues. Lance hasn't had legal issues in a long time. He had a real significant one in 2010 that was dismissed later, a charge alleging that he pushed his girlfriend down a flight of stairs. That case was dismissed. He has not had a legal issue since then, but so many other issues and obviously so many kind of, you know, just little button pushing issues that I think have kind of made people a little exhausted with him at times. Larry Bird admitted the blowing in LeBron James's ear thing gave him some problems, and he didn't like that. So there's a whole lot of baggage, obviously. So with Lance, you'd want to take a look and just see what happens in camp. If you bring him in, how does he respond? Most importantly, how is he in terms of just being part of a cohesive unit, being part of a team? And then if he does well, if you bring him in camp and he has a good camp, then you have some decisions to make because obviously you've got too many players. And then you get into the possibility of trades. Jim mentioned Greg Monroe. I don't know that there's any more chatter about that than there has been. It's one of those things we've talked about a million times on this podcast that's not, I mean, not literally a million. We haven't done that many episodes yet. But it's one of those things that's not going to go away until Greg Monroe is somewhere else or you know, whatever happens. And if he's in New Orleans, if he gets traded to somebody else, until that happens, it's never really going to go away because he's a New Orleans guy. There's been some interest in the past. That's definitely something, as we've talked about on here before, it is something that they've discussed with Milwaukee. And the possibility of Tyreke Evans being included in one of those trades for Greg Monroe has come up, and you could throw another piece in there maybe and kind of make it work. And so you could theoretically do a two-for-one kind of thing. You send a couple players out. You bring one player back. Maybe it is Greg Monroe, whoever it is. And then you have a roster spot, and then you could look at having Lance Stevenson on your team, or a Sean Dawson, or whoever else. Chris Copeland is going to be here. Robert Sacre is going to be here. So you can explore some other options with your roster. And it's not necessarily – I don't think it necessarily makes a Greg Monroe trade more likely. As I've said before, I don't really get that trade if you're playing this way in this system and you're committed to playing this system. I don't think there's a great deal of logic in it. But I'm not running the team. They could do, you know, they could do something that would surprise me. So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, certainly, that there's a trade, that there are two parts moving out for one part, whoever that is, whether it's Greg Monroe or somebody else. But it's going to take something like that to get Lance Stevenson on the team. And so, you know, to me right now, without setting odds, without saying it's, you know, it's 70-30 that he won't be on the team, I think the chances are fairly slim that he's on the roster. But if he comes into camp and is great, if he's something like what he was like with Memphis, or certainly something like what he was in Indiana when he was good on, you know, both ends of the floor, and despite all the kind of baggage, was a really productive player and helped make Indiana better. If he shows all those things, they're going to take a look, sure. You know, and again, they may not be the only team that tries to get him in camp. I don't know where that stands right now You know, I haven't talked to Lance's people to any great extent to know where that kind of stands. So, you know, it may or may not happen that he's in camp. If he is in camp, then he has to play exceptionally well, well enough for them to want to make some moves around, you know, move some pieces around to get him in and get him on the roster. And so I think it's, given what we've seen out of Lance Stevenson the last 2 years, I don't think it's likely that he's going to come in here and do that. If he does, though, it could change your thinking. This is a team, obviously, I think if you look at some of these things, whether it's him, whether it's bringing Sean Dawson in, whether it's having some interest in Ty Lawson, you know, having 15 players under guaranteed contracts does not mean they're done evaluating, because you do have that option to move some pieces around. And so you're also looking for down the road, too. You're looking at other options. You know, what if Lance Stevenson doesn't land with a team? What if he's a free agent going into the season? What if he gets in a week and doesn't have a team and something happens and you need a player? What if some of your guys aren't ready to start the season? What if you keep him through camp and you've got some guys who aren't ready to start the season and you can add an extra player? Who knows what they might be looking into? I don't think you'd have an emergency waiver that early, but you're keeping your options open all the time. You're keeping your options open to move players, and you're just taking a look around the league and seeing what's out there, because I think if you look at what they're doing, it says they are still evaluating the roster, and they have a ton of pieces that aren't tradable because they're guys who they signed just this past offseason who you can't deal until December. So, you know, are they still looking at Tyreke Evans trades? Are they still looking at, you know, Ajensa? I'm sure they would be willing to talk to somebody about Omer Asik if somebody wanted to. I just think it's safe to say, if the Lance Stevenson thing tells you anything at all, it tells you that they are still evaluating and that the roster isn't necessarily set. And I don't know that we knew that 100% sure, for sure, but I think we now know that. I think we can be 100% sure about that now. So I'm not sure that answers anybody's question exactly, but that's sort of where we stand, I think. That's where the Pelicans are with Lance Stevenson right now, which is, in summary, maybe he comes to camp, and if he does, he'd probably have to blow him away to be there. But I think there's a chance he could do that. So we'll see what happens. It's certainly going to spice up the preseason and camp if Lance Stevenson is there, because that's an interesting guy who's, I don't think, shy about talking, and I think might be kind of fun. So we'll find out. All right, let's get into the unpleasantness question-wise. Every time I ask for questions, I know what I'm getting into, right? I like doing this. I like answering your questions. But every time, I know that at least once I'm going to get a question that even Alvin Gentry doesn't know the answer to at this point. And it's going to be a question about the backcourt rotation. And you guys did not let me down. You asked two of them, at least. I saw two of them. I'm going to get into this. But let me just tell you right now, you know how I feel about predictions, about things like this. I take very much a wait-and-see attitude to things. So I'm not going to sit here and project minutes because that's silly. And I will talk a little bit about starters and, you know, something about rotations. But look, this is a team, we still have a lot of things to figure out. So let's get into these questions. Cameron Gill, at Cameron is my name, asks, who do you think the first guard off the bench is, Galloway or Moore? And do you see more minutes for them than last year? And Crescent City Connect, who's at Neo Nirvana, asks, who do you think should start at shooting guard? If Moore starts, then which backup point guard will initiate the offense, Frazier or Galloway? So these are interesting questions because they take a couple different assumptions. You know, one is saying who's the first guard off the bench. Cameron's asking that, Galloway or Moore. He's assuming that neither of them starts, probably because he knows I've been predicting that Buddy Hield will start. You know, our guy at Crescent City Connect here is saying, who do you think should start a shooting guard? And if it's Moore, he's kind of assuming Etuan Moore, then which backup point guard initiates the offense, Frazier or Galloway? First of all, let's go to that last part of that. If you're looking for the guy who's going to be the point guard, the one of those guys who is going to initiate offense and do that consistently, Tim Frazier is your guy in that regard. I mean, if you look at his, he's not going to play as many minutes as he played last year. He played almost 30 minutes a game, and we know that he did that because the Pelicans were so banged up, especially at the end of the year. He was playing so many minutes. And if you look at the Nylon Calculus playing time estimates, which you guys know that I love, he played 100% of his minutes at point guard. That's what he is. He's a point guard. The other two guys are a lot more flexible, and I think their similarity and their flexibility makes the question of which of those guys is going to play first and most often really, really difficult to answer. And that's why I won't do a very good job of it right now, because again, crazy me, I like to think let's get into the season a little bit, not the season necessarily. Let's get into preseason. Let's get into camp. Let's see how guys are playing. Let's get into preseason games and see what the rotations look like and whether they work. When I see some things I don't think work, I could say, okay, I don't like this as much. I think they should do that. But trying to say what I think they should or will do now is kind of pointless. I didn't watch a lot of Knicks games. I didn't watch a lot of Bulls games. So trying to evaluate how those guys fit with those rotations and what that means about how they're going to fit with these rotations, that's really difficult to do on September 1st. So let me throw some numbers at you, and we can talk from there. Langston Galloway last year played 24.8 minutes a game. Etuan Moore played 21.4. I don't know if Galloway's minutes will change a ton from 24.8. I mean, if you look at like Norris Cole, averaged 26.6. So, you know, there are some minutes that are available there. And by the way, you can't do a straight player-for-player exchange on minutes because the Pelicans had so many injuries last year, and every team has injuries. So some guys' minutes are way up when certain guys are playing, they're way down. Or certain, you know, way up when certain guys aren't playing, and then way down when certain guys are. Like Tony Douglas averaged 20 minutes a game. What do you make of Tony Douglas's 20? Because sometimes he wasn't playing at all. Sometimes he played a lot because they had a lot of injuries. Sometimes he was playing some and kind of filling a role. So you can't do a straight minutes for minutes kind of exchange when you're bringing in new players. But you can't say like there's a pool of minutes for the guards and look at that. And that's one way to kind of break down minutes. Looking at last year's minutes, I don't know how useful it is, but let's look at, in addition to that, and these are also things that are impacted by injuries and rotations and that kind of thing. Look at Galloway and Moore and their minutes based on those Nylon Calculus numbers at shooting guard and at point guard. And those numbers are really similar. I mean, if you look at last year, Langston Galloway played 63% of his minutes at shooting guard, 36% at point guard. Etuan Moore played 58% at shooting guard, 41% at point guard. So slightly more. But I don't think that necessarily means that Etuan Moore is more of a point guard. Some of that is, you know, the injury situation. Some of it is just what the personnel is around you. So I think it's a real question at this point, which of those guys is going to be first off the bench, which guy is going to fill which role, and then where Frazier plugs in as you figure out the way those three guys are playing, where those three guys are getting their minutes. I think Frazier will see the biggest dip in minutes from the year before. I think the other two guys may see a jump. I think Moore will see a jump from 21.4. But it is complicated to try to figure that out. It is hard to project because I think Galloway and Moore give you a lot of the same things. Both guys have good reputations defensively, so you may see which guy is playing better defensively. You may see which guy matches up best with the two guard who would be on the floor when he comes in, or the point guard if there's kind of a cross match or whatever. Because you would imagine that, you know, the first sub out of a game in the backcourt next year, this year, you would expect it's going to be Buddy Hield if he starts. You would expect Hield is not going to play the same stretch of minutes at the very beginning that maybe Drew Holiday will. So that seems like a safe assumption at the very least. But which of those two guys is going to be the first one off the bench, I think, is a great question that is going to be answered in preseason. I think answering that question now, and again, I don't want to be a jerk about trying to make predictions. I'm saying that answering that question now with two players who are pretty similar and who we haven't seen play with any of these guys, it's kind of pointless. We will find that answer is to be discovered. So there is no answer right now. We can't really, we can't give one because it doesn't exist. That answer is going to be, it's going to come out of what we see starting September 23rd and 24th. and moving forward. So, you know, that's just a long way of not answering a question. But let me say this. I'm predicting that Buddy Hield will start. I reserve the right to change that prediction once I see some preseason and see these guys play. And my guess is, you know, it's almost pointless to guess Galloway or Moore, first guy off the bench. I think those guys are really going to be have kind of interchangeable roles. So Galloway or maybe Moore. No, Galloway, but maybe Moore. I don't know. Yeah, question answered. Hield, Galloway, or Moore. Okay, I think we definitely should move on because my head is starting to hurt from circles. I was kind of going circular there. I got into a loop. I apologize. Backcourt rotation question, man. It gets me every time. All right, Tejada, who's at B Tejada, says, in your opinion, what is the ceiling and or floor for the Pels this upcoming season, the best and worst case scenario? Now, this is a prediction question, but this one's a little bit more of a thing I can wrap my head around. We don't know how these guys are going to play. So, you know, I've said I think this is a mysterious team. I think it could swing pretty widely one way or the other. So I think I can give you a basic, you know, ceiling floor situation. But let's just say this. We're going to do this without injuries. We're not going to take injuries into account. The floor for this team is Anthony Davis misses 50 games. And they're terrible, obviously. You know, that's we just can't account for that. So even with the Pelicans, you can't count on injuries happening. So you just assume that they're not going to happen any more than just like your basic kind of injury stuff. And, you know, that's the disclaimer. So to me, I think if they have a healthy Anthony Davis, they're going to be better than last year, I think. If the injury stuff just doesn't decimate them, I don't think they're going to be anywhere near worse than 30 wins. I don't think they're going to win 29 games if they're a reasonably healthy team. I think, you know, they could still not be very good. They could struggle offensively. You know, the defense could not get to where we think it can. And I think defensively they should be pretty good. They got better defensively. They got better personnel. They got a little more versatile. They have a defensive coach who, despite what happened last year, Darren Erman has a really good reputation. I think now he's got some parts to work with that are a little bit more defensive-minded, and I think they should be better on that side of the floor. So I don't think anything in that 30 range is at the bottom, but if the offense doesn't click, if defensively they don't make a huge leap forward, could they win 35 games? Sure. You know, they got Anthony Davis and Drew Holiday, and then you have a bit of a drop-off to who's your next scorer, how good is Buddy Hield going to be, who makes a leap offensively. Somebody has to. If nobody does, could this be a real bad team again? Could it be a 35-win team? Yeah, I think it could. So that, to me, is your floor. That's still slightly better than last year. That shows improvement from last year just because I'm saying the injuries are so much of what happened last year. When you talk about how good they could be, so you put what's their ceiling, I think for that, you have to also say, just like you give an injury disclaimer on the floor, I think on the ceiling you have to say this team, not let's say the personnel they have now. So we're not going to talk about what happens if they get Greg Monroe or they make some other big trade. Let's just talk about what they have right now in place. And by the way, when we talk about what they have in place, that includes Tyreke Evans. So I didn't talk about that guard rotation question at all because he didn't come up. And, you know, we'll just deal with Tyreke when we know whether or not he's going to play, when he's going to play, if he's going to play for the Pelicans this year. So let's kind of moving forward, talking about the ceiling for these guys. And I'm not going to factor Tyreke into this a whole lot either because I just don't know. He's such a great unknown here. I think the ceiling on this team, if they come together, if they're much, much improved defensively, if they offensively are better than we expect, so I think what you're talking about here is that sort of perfect storm situation where the defense improves dramatically. The offense, you have a bunch of guys who individually and then as a collective, they take a big step forward because they're in this system and they thrive in this system. And by the way, that's happened before. There are numbers that show some guys taking big jumps in this offensive system under either Alvin Gentry or Mike D'Antoni. You know, that happens from time to time. It's a possibility. So you could see Solomon Hill take a leap offensively. If all that happens, if this team clicks, it's hard to say exactly how good they could be because what kind of leap are we talking about? But let's just say Solomon Hill makes a big jump. Let's say that Langston Galloway and Etuan Moore replicate, you know, the year they had last year or something very similar to the seasons they had last year, but maybe get a little bit better. Maybe they shoot it a little better. Maybe they average a couple more points. I still don't see this team without a clear-cut sort of third scorer, and with some holes with the struggles I think that the team has constructed is going to have to rebound the ball, which is a big part of your defense. I still don't think this is a team that's going to get to 50, even in that ideal scenario. Could they get to 45? Man, 15 games in the NBA is a massive improvement given the sort of caliber of player they added. That might be the absolute best case scenario. I would tend to think more like 43, 42, something along those lines with these guys. Now, again, so many caveats in this, in the sense that they could surprise, they could disappoint, you know. I think that low end is a little easier to figure out. That floor is a little easier to figure out than the ceiling is, because I just think there are, you know, when you talk about guys making a big jump, how big a jump is realistically possible? So I would put the ceiling on this team as constructed somewhere in the 42 to 43 win range, you know, with the chance that certainly that's my ceiling. That's saying this is the number that I'm putting out there. It's not to say they couldn't surprise and win more than that, but I think it would probably take some different personnel. And now I'm just rambling with a guess. So let's move on to another question. But I like that one. That one, you know, rotations and stuff, I don't like predicting, but other kinds of predictions, those are sort of fun. I still want to see the team play before I get too much into, you know, figuring out what they're going to be. And that's one good thing about predictions, you know, is that for the most part, we do those in the preseason section. The day of the paper where we preview the Pelicans, and that happens when the season starts. So there'll be a chance to get a little bit of a look at them and get a sense of how they're going to play and what the rotations are going to be and how some of these guys are going to play together. So I look forward to that. I like getting to see a little bit of that before you dive too far into making the predictions. Okay, I'm rambling. It happens sometimes when I answer these questions. I just kind of, you know, I don't take a lot of notes. I try to answer them in as live a setting as possible. And sometimes that might not be the smartest thing, but it happens. But we're going to try to power through. We're going to try to focus. Duty, a.k.a. Junior, who has my least favorite Twitter handle to try to read, at Junior _ Trap Gang Kev. I wish he would change his Twitter name to, like, Steve or Kev, but you know what? You do you. Have the Twitter handle that you want. I'm bad at reading it. I'm not good at reading that name. He wants to know any info on how the group of players, Drew and AD, got together, reacted to each other on the court. The short answer is no. I don't have any sense of that. I haven't talked to those guys while they've been off doing their thing out there. I don't think there was a lot of on-court stuff there. There was some. They did some stuff on the court, but it was a lot of workout stuff, a lot of chemistry stuff, spending some time together. You know, I think they went out to dinner. They went out bowling. So I don't think we have a great sense of that yet. And as we get closer to preseason, and it's certainly when we get to media day and practices, there will be some talk about that. But I don't think we have a great sense of where that is right now. You know, I think Terrence Jones said in Lexington they enjoyed working out together, he and Anthony Davis, but he didn't go much deeper than that. So not a real clear cut answer to that one at this point. Ernie Ballard at Ebala1. He wants to know, how's AD and Gentry's relationship? Seemed like Monty was a mentor to him, and last year AD looked uninterested at times. I would agree that there were times when Anthony Davis seemed a little out of it. And, you know, I talked about that some. I didn't have the podcast, but I did talk about it some last year during the season. There were just some times, particularly early, I thought, where he didn't seem fully engaged. And I don't know why that was. I can't really necessarily put my finger on it. Whether that's a relationship issue with Alvin Gentry, I don't know. What I can tell you about, you know, their dynamic with each other, I think they like each other. I think they get along. First, Anthony Davis, not really a boat rocker when it comes to coaching. You know, Gentry has called him several times, and I think this is a consensus that as superstar players go, he's really low maintenance. And I don't think he's the kind of guy who really clashes with his coach. It's just not really his style. And I think personally, they seem to get along quite well. Gentry is a difficult guy. Talk to people around the league. He's a difficult guy to not get along with. Most people do get along with him. And he does have a great reputation as a player's coach. Now, you know, Anthony Davis didn't have the year last year that he had the year before. Does he hold a grudge about any of that? Does he resent Alvin Gentry for coming in, changing a system that allowed him to flourish and got the Pelicans into the playoffs? Does he resent the fact that Gentry came in, changed a lot of things, and then things didn't go as well? I don't know. I can't tell you that that he does. I can't tell you that he doesn't. I can tell you that obviously there were a lot of extenuating circumstances last year, and I think he understands that as well as anybody else does. But, you know, I'm sure he'll go into this season with the expectation that they're going to be better. And if they're not, maybe there will be some issues there. But I think that's going to be across the board. I think not just players. There are going to be a lot of people who have issues if these guys don't start off well and have a strong season. So in terms of just like that personal dynamic, though, I don't think there's any kind of bad blood. I think those guys get along pretty well. They're very complimentary of each other publicly. And I think privately they seem to get along very well. I don't know. I wasn't here for the Anthony Davis, Monty Williams relationship. So I just can't speak to it. I'm sure this one is different, but I don't get any sense that it is strained on any level. That's just from my perspective. Scott Kushner, our friend Scott Kushner, four-time guest on the podcast, wants to know where babies come from. A couple people also wanted me to answer that question. A pelican brings them, is my understanding. I told you that my man Jordan Phelps gets two questions. Jordan Phelps doesn't know that I actually have a friend named Jordan Phelps. They're not the same person. It's very odd to me that I have a Twitter follower who regularly listens to the podcast and asks questions on the podcast and compliments it quite a lot. So he gets a lot of shout outs. But he has the same name as a friend of mine from way back in Kentucky. So that's weird. But for all those reasons, he can ask all the questions he wants, and I will always try to answer them. And he asked a really easy one for his second one, which is who you got, LSU or Wisconsin. That's LSU's going to win. That's easy. That one I'm pretty confident about. That might be the easiest question that I get today, except for maybe the last one. And that one comes from, are we saying Luis Tile? Are we saying Louis Tile? I'm not sure. I always get it wrong. But it's at L-U-I-S. T-H-I-E-L-E-1-3. And he says he wants to know my favorite sitcom or comedy series. This is a very easy question. It's a little bit challenging if I'm limiting it to current sitcoms, but even that's pretty easy. I think I would say Veep is my current favorite, the one that's airing right now. But all-time favorite, and to me, by the way, sitcom is a high level of television. My favorite sitcoms are among my favorite shows. I know everybody likes your Breaking Bads and your Game of Thrones, and you know I like that stuff too. I'm behind on Breaking Bad. I was slow to get into it. I'm still kind of slow to really buy in. But you know, I like Game of Thrones. I like a lot of stuff. I like prestige TV. But I like sitcoms a lot, so they mean a lot to me. My favorite sitcoms, and my favorite one of all time. Easy answer, as anybody who knows me knows. It's Arrested Development. Primarily the first three seasons on Fox, that fourth Netflix season. You know, I kind of like what they were trying to do more than I like the execution. It's not bad. It holds up well to rewatching. But those first three seasons from Fox, those are the best, funniest, most rewatchable episodes of television ever, of any genre. Nothing has ever been more rewatchable than Arrested Development, because every time you watch it, you pick up a new joke. And you wouldn't think that's true. You wouldn't think you could just keep watching it over and over and find something that you didn't find the last time. And yet, it happens. It is to me the peak of that form. And there are a lot of other good ones. I mean, you know, I love Parks and Rec. That's probably second for me all time. I like 30 Rock. I like Seinfeld. I like Curb Your Enthusiasm quite a lot, and that's cool that that's coming back. I like Friends. I don't have any problem admitting that. But Arrested Development, to me, the absolute A number one, not even a question. So, you know, when you talk about the best of things, you know what else is the best of things? SeatGeek is the best way for you to buy your sports and concert tickets. I want to remind you of that again before we go. Download the SeatGeek app. Use our promo code LOPELICANS. Get you $20 rebate on your first purchase with SeatGeek. just the best way. There's so many concerts in New Orleans. You know, forget about just the sporting events. You got plenty of opportunities in New Orleans to use SeatGeek on sports, but you're swimming in opportunities with concert tickets. You can get your tickets delivered right in the app. It's so easy to use. You guys definitely want to check that out. And, you know, we appreciate them for all their support on the Locked On Podcast Network. So next week, I don't know. You know, I never promise you. When we get into the daily podcasts, when the season starts, I'll have a better sense of what's going to happen day to day because I'll kind of know what's coming up. I'll have a little bit more of a sense of the schedule. You know, it'll be a little easier to plan out. But for next week, don't know yet. It won't be another Q&A because, you know, we did that this week. We'll do another one of these eventually. I like doing them every few weeks. But hopefully we'll have a guest. Hopefully Mason Ginsburg won't hold it against me that I took a shot at it. Maybe we'll have him come on. But whatever format we choose, I will be here. I hope you will be too.
Napa Know How. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know How. Napa Know How. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.